In the garage of Dr. Frank Conrad, on November 2nd, 1920, the first scheduled pre-advertised radio program in the United States went on the air. Station KDKA was broadcasting returns of the presidential race on the evening of Election Day. From a humble beginning in a Pittsburgh garage to the sumptuous studios of the national radio networks in New York, Chicago, and Hollywood, these are the years we refer to as the golden age of radio.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing in your
time. Hal Kemp, on the air for Griffin.
It's time to shine, shine your shoes anyway.
Tony Home Permanent presents...
This is Nora Drake.
The Golden Age of Radio is brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889. We'll join hosts Dick Bertel and Ed Corcoran and meet their special guest, Ed Rice, after these words from Burritt Mutual Savings Bank.
Do you want to get rich? Rich, you say? Who doesn't? Well, here's how. Save a little each payday, and do it where little deposits are welcome, at the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. A small sum saved regularly will accumulate astoundingly fast. Hard work, frugal living, regular saving, all old-fashioned virtues, but the only sure way to succeed, even to become rich. The place to save before you spend? The Big B, the big strong bank built on faithful small deposits from loyal depositors. Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. Four convenient offices, New Britain, West Hartford, and on the border of Rocky Hill and Wethersfield. Don't wait. Start saving small, or big, now.
Now the host of the Golden Age of Radio, Dick Bertel.
Good evening, and with me is the man with 2,000 hours of old-time radio memories on tape, Ed Corcoran. Well, Ed, who is our guest tonight?
Well, Dick, tonight we have a man who is a writer, producer, director of such shows as the Fleischman's East Hour, believe it or not, the Shell Show, the Old Gold Show, the Textron Theater, and now he's producer of educational television at the University of Connecticut. I refer to Ed Rice.
Ed, it's awfully nice to have you here on the program, and we're going to talk about that wonderful career of yours, which encompassed so many wonderful shows and people, for that matter. And of all the shows that you've done, what would be considered your favorite, or is that unfair?
That is unfair. I haven't the slightest idea what my favorite is. I guess the one that I was working on at the moment was always the best show. Shows that you have talked about before in this series, like Bing Crosby and the Chase and Sanborn Show, I suppose stick out because they were so fantastically successful.
Yes, and of course there were many other shows that you had a lesser association with, and we do want to talk about some of those too, because we haven't had the opportunity to cover that area. I'm thinking, for example, of the Joe Penner Show and so many more.
Well, my association with the Joe Penner Show was certainly very small. I came into the J. Waller Thompson Company, an advertising agency, as the messenger boy, and one of the first duties I had was to take the script over to a hotel and give it to Joe Penner. And as a messenger boy and an office boy, I was around the rehearsals of the Joe Penner Show and saw a great deal of it, and it was a great new world for me, and I loved it.
I suppose that was about 1934, I guess, somewhere in there.
That was about it.
And radio, by that time, certainly was a major communications medium.
It was, and it went up from there for several years.
Well, let's find out how you got started in this business. Did you major? Were there radio courses in those days? Did you have a background in it?
I never heard of anything like a radio course in those days. I don't think there were any. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was fortunate enough to go to college, and there were no jobs to be had, so I might as well go to college if you could possibly make it, and somehow or other I made it. But I majored in psychology. And I acted in every theatrical production at the college, Colgate University, had at the time. And as I was about to graduate, the professor of psychology asked me what I was going to do, and I didn't have the slightest idea. And he told me that with my interest in psychology and in the theater. You put them together, it was radio advertising. So he sent me down to see an old student of his, and I got a job at the J. Waller Thompson as a messenger boy.
Bet there were a lot of messenger boys in those days with college degrees,
Ed. Yeah, that's right. That's a first in itself, isn't it, Ed?
I wasn't the first college degree to be a messenger boy, no.
I wonder if you could describe a little bit about Joe Penner, then maybe we could hear what he sounded like.
Well, Joe Penner was I guess you'd call him a boob comic. He had a big cigar all the time. He was always being rooked by somebody. He had his two classic catch lines. When he began to think that somebody was getting the better of him, he would try to turn the tables and say, "Do you want to buy a duck?" Which had no reference to anything, but he thought maybe he could sell the guy a duck rather than be sold something that he didn't want, like the Brooklyn Bridge. And when he finally found out in the sketch that he was completely rooked, he would come out with the last line usually, which was, "You nasty man." And I think his years in burlesque gave him the timing that was necessary. It really isn't the material in a great comic. It's what he does with the material. And Joe Penner knew what to do with it.
Once again, we bring you the Park Avenue Penners. As you know, Joe's father and mother have been away on a long yachting trip, and they are expected home today. We find Joe Penner, the black sheep, planning a celebration in honor of his parents' homecoming. Here he is, Joe Penner.
Be it ever so humble, there's no place like...
Ouch! Please, Master Joseph, get down off that ladder.
Don't bother me. I'm putting up some decorations, doing a little carpenter work.
But you can't even hit a nail.
Oh, no? Take a look at my thumb.
Just wait till your father sees what you've done to the plaster. Why don't you get a regular carpenter to do that work?
I am a carpenter. Didn't you know I used to be in the construction business? That is, until the foreman fired me.
Yes, but why did he fire you?
Well, you see, A foreman is a fellow that stands around and watches the men work.
What's that got to do with it?
Well, he got jealous of me. People thought I was the foreman. See who that is, Godfrey?
I beg to announce, it's Miss Penelope Twiffington from next door.
Oh, Joseph, it's too divine seeing you. It's too divine.
Oh, it's too divine.
Oh, but I mean, to think that your matron Pater will soon be home. Isn't it thrilling? It is, I mean, it's thrilling.
Oh, definitely. That is, oh, but definitely.
Oh, but I mean, I'm so excited. I hope you don't think I'm silly. I mean, you don't think.
Oh, you don't think. I mean, you're silly. I mean, if your matron Pater were coming home, you'd be just like I am.
Why? How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, it's too simply perfectly marvelous. You're just as excited as a little boy with his first pair of long trousers.
Trousers?
Yes, trousers. You know, long palms.
Oh, of course, long palms. Yeah. Those things us men wear with a coat and a vop.
Of course, my dear boy, you should have some entertainment at your party. I shall sing for your guests.
No, I'd rather have some entertainment.
But your parents enjoy music, don't they?
Well, I know my father likes music because... One night after a lodge meeting, he came home with a manhole cover and he tried to play it on the Victrola.
Then that's settled. I shall sing 10,000 Leaves Are Falling.
But really, Miss Pleasanton, I didn't know you could sing.
Oh, you didn't? Why, you attended my last Park Avenue concert.
Oh, that's right, I did, yeah.
Didn't you notice how my voice filled the hall?
Yeah, I saw several people leaving to make room for it.
Flatterer. Let me run through a few notes. Just to give you an idea.
What's that?
Oh, I'm just loosening up.
Sounds like you're falling apart.
10,000 leaves are falling.
Make it lower.
All right. 5,000 leaves are falling. From the top of the tree. Top of the tree. Top of the tree.
What's the matter? Are you stuck at the top of the tree there?
From the top of the tree! Joseph, don't you think I have the voice of a thrush and the range of a nightingale?
Yeah, if I had a rock, I could kill two birds with one stone.
Oh, it was wonderful hearing that voice again. I remember the show very well, although I don't know that we recall the sponsor very much today. Are they still in business? Kokomold, I think, was the sponsor, at least at one time. Do you remember?
Maybe at one time, but not the show that I was connected with in my slight way. The sponsor was Fleischmann's Yeast for Bakers.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're still around.
They're still around.
They're standard brands, I guess they are today.
Yes. Well, they were standard brands then. Yes. But the Four Bakers was very important because what we were selling was not Fleischmann's Yeast, but the various things that the bakers made. I did write commercials for that series. And we would sell rolls and bread. And instead of yeast for your home, you would sell the baker's products.
Mm. We'll hear more about your wonderful career in radio, Ed, right after this.
Get smile power, the kind of confident, contented countenance that comes from cash. Salted away cash in Barrett Mutual Savings Bank at the highest legal savings bank interest rate. And you don't need a lot of money to do it. You can save a little. It's the constant, patient, every payday habit of saving that really counts. At the Big B, we love your small deposits. We know they grow for you and for us. Result, we will both have smile power. Plus, we help with our high interest rates paid to you on your savings. Barrett Mutual Savings Bank. Deposits insured to $20,000 by FDIC.
Ed Rice is our guest tonight, producer of educational television at the University of Connecticut and for many years associated with some of the top radio shows heard here in America. And perhaps, Ed, we should follow a bit chronologically where Ed's travels took him beyond the Joe Penner Show.
Didn't Believe It or Not come into that area, Ed, about that time? Or is there something that more significant
No, it was about that time when Believe It or Not was, I think, the most popular radio show in the air. It came from the series of cartoons that Robert L. Ripley drew in the newspapers.
Those wonderful stories with those strange twists were so characteristic of the Believe It or Not show. And I'm thinking particularly, Ed, of the story of the opera. I'm going to say no more. I'm going to let you develop it from there.
All right. Ripley came up with a story that said that years ago in Italian opera, there was a little-known opera that was produced in which the tenor sang a song in which he brought the curses of the god down, and one of the lines was something like, "May God strike you blind." At the first performance of this opera in some small Italian village, the tenor was looking at a lady in one of the boxes, and as he came to that line, that lady was struck blind, believe it or not. That's what Ripley said. He went ahead and described another performance of the same opera a year or so later, and the same thing happened, believe it or not. Then the opera was never done because there was this terrible story connected with it. It was a superstition. But Ripley said that he had found a tenor who was willing to sing that song, and he had a copy of it from a dusty library someplace, and the tenor would sing it and look directly at Harriet Hilliard when he came to that line. The tenor sang it, and at the moment that line happened, there was a tremendous scream, and we went to dead air. A moment later, we came back on the air, and Ripley explained that the tenor he had hired to sing this song was himself blind, and therefore no damage was done to anybody, believe it or not.
How many of those stories did you make up out of whole cloth, Ed?
Well, that was an interesting thing about Ripley's show. The title, Believe It or Not, which of course was his, is a great title because it does say Believe It or Not, mm-hmm. and you could choose not to believe it. Ripley had authentication for everything that he said, but his authentication was not very reliable. You wouldn't necessarily have to go beyond one person saying that that had happened, and he would accept that, and you can believe it or not as you chose.
Ed, do you think we might delve into your collection of Believe It or Not recordings?
Yes, this is a very rare show. Having been done back in the 30s, very few recordings remain, but we do have an excerpt from that show with Ripley himself actually doing some of the voice characterizations.
I wouldn't say that Ripley was a great man at voice characterizations, though.
So you can say that this is a Ripley show, believe it or not.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, frequently in my travels throughout the world, I find that one, believe it or not, leads to another. A few moments ago, you heard how a doctor in a remote section of South America stumbled across Pasteur's cure for hydrophobia at the precise moment when a patient lay dying of that very disease. And now, I'm going to tell you how that very, believe it or not, led to a much stranger one. And let me sketch the story for you. The time is some weeks later in the same year, 1885. Dr. Rivero has made many trips to the home of the woman stricken by hydrophobia, and at last is able to give a final decision in this strange case.
Well, Senora, it will not be necessary for me to come again. You are well, a little weak perhaps, but soon you will be as good as ever.
Oh, Doctor, you have been so good.
But no, you have done me the great service, Senora. You have taught me the cure for this sickness of yours.
Oh, Senor Doctor, as you know, we are very poor.
Yes, I know, but think nothing of it. You have paid me the greatest fee I could ask. Greater knowledge.
Oh, but I want to do more, Senor Doctor.
You must not talk so, Senora. My fee, it is paid. Give it no more thought. And now, Senora, I must be going.
I will go with you, Senor Doctor.
Go with me?
See?
But that is impossible. Out of the question, you're still not well.
Just a little way. I am well enough, Senor Doctor. Although we are poor, perhaps there is a way in which I can pay you. Let me show you the mine nearby. The mine in which there is the silver that cries.
Silver that cries?
See.
Senora, are you again delirious?
No, Senor Doctor. For days I have lain here and wondered how I could pay you. And at last I thought, perhaps I can pay the Senor Doctor with this silver that cries.
Senora, please tell me, what is this thing, this silver that cries?
The silver that cries is that which comes from the mine, Senor Doctor. The mine which belonged to my husband. It is the metal which looks like the silver. And yet when it is bent or dropped to the ground, it rings with a strange noise, like crying. Oh, Senor Doctor, this mine and all it contains is yours for saving my life.
Oh, but this is foolish. And yet, Senora, so strange is this story. I will look at this mine and I shall take some of it back to the village and see what kind of silver it is that cries. There, senor. There it is. It was given to me as a fee by a woman who lives in the mountains. Tell me, she called it silver that cries. Well, is it so? Is this silver?
Let me see. No, senor doctor. This is not silver. But perhaps it is better than silver. Senor, that is what is called tin.
And so, from one, believe it or not, came another. A South American doctor who stumbled across a cure for hydrophobia as his patient lay dying of that disease received as his fee the rights to a mine which contained almost pure tin. And so was tin discovered in Bolivia, tin which is now responsible for 90% of Bolivia's income. Believe it or not.
The voice of Robert Ripley, believe it or not. And we'll return to our guest, Ed Rice, right after this.
Burritt Mutual Savings Bank asks you this question. Why should you save? Burritt Mutual Savings Bank will also try to answer. The reasons for savings are almost endless. One, it can open the door to your new home. Two, it can give you the means to new furniture, a new car, a boat, a vacation. Three, it can help send your children to college. for, it can give you that glorious feeling of independence and prosperity. Don't ever feel that you have to have large amounts to save. At Burritt, deposits as small as $1 are welcome. Really welcome. Start now and save for all these reasons and perhaps some of your own. If you can't save a lot, save a little. At Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, where deposits are safe and earn good dividends. Start your account tomorrow.
You are listening to the Golden Age of Radio, brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889. Here on 1080 Radio, WTIC in Hartford, Connecticut.
Ed, perhaps you should bring our listeners up to date as to the name of our guest and his background.
Well, the name of our guest is Ed Rice, who was a producer, a writer, director of many of radio's great shows during the Golden Age. Presently, he's the producer of educational television at the University of Connecticut out in Storrs.
And we're talking about those wonderful radio programs that Ed Rice was associated with for many years, and I think perhaps the biggest, Ed, was the Shell Show, at least during this 1930s period, would you say?
Well, actually, I don't remember that era myself that well, Dick, but from all I gather, historically speaking, the Shell Show had to be the big show of the 30s, perhaps at least the early 30s at least.
Because, it was a big one.
They had, of course, Al Jolson and many, many guest stars, including Wallace Beery. And matter of fact, you wrote a part for Wallace Beery, did you not, Ed, that we might be able to play tonight?
Yes, so this was not where Wallace Beery was a guest on an Al Jolson show, which he certainly was several times, but while Jolie was not there, we would have other stars, and Wallace Beery was the regular master of ceremonies of the Shell Show for quite a while.
Oh, I see. Yes.
And I think you're referring to a young girl singer. Is that?
Yeah, I think some girl they just discovered, and this was her radio debut, wasn't it not?
This was her radio debut. We always had a spot for a girl singer in the show. It was a regular format for all of the shows, one spot for a girl singer, a different one each week, usually fairly unknown. An agent came to us one day and said he had a girl singer. He was so insistent that I remember going up to Wally Beery's house one evening and listening to this girl sing to just a piano in his living room. And she was good. Her name was Judy Garland. It's the first time I ever heard Judy Garland. We booked her, put her on the show, and paid her $50. MGM had just made a short movie called Concert in the Park with two young girls that they had under contract, Judy Garland and Deanna Durbin, and they couldn't decide which one to keep. They were going to let one go, and they made this concert in the park. It hadn't been released yet by the time we used Judy on the show, and MGM decided to keep Judy and let Deanna Durbin go. And for quite a while, they thought they'd made a big mistake because Deanna Durbin became an immediate success at Universal with Three Smart Girls and 100 Men and a Girl and other pictures like that.
Right.
And it took Judy a little while to break through, but she sure broke through.
1939,
when she did.
Right?
But she was unknown, and I guess that was her first major coast-to-coast appearance before the general public was on the Shell Show with Wally Beery. Although, of course, she'd been in vaudeville with her family before that.
And yeah. Don't tell me you're going to play that for us.
Yes, we have the author here, and we have the actual excerpt. And Wallace Beery, of course, he passed away in 1949, so there isn't too many of his radio appearances that survived all this time, but this happens to be one of them. So here it is, Dick.
Now, the little lady standing here beside me isn't exactly a celebrity yet. She's only 12 years old. She probably won't be famous all maybe for a couple of years. Her name is Judy Garland, and I'm sure that you remember her singing here about 4 weeks ago. Well, since her last appearance here, she signed a 7-year contract with the MGM studio. Isn't that great? Gosh. The last time she was here, she was so good that everybody said to me, Wally, why, you've got to have that little Judy Garland back again. So here she is, and I'll tell you right now that we're very proud of her. Wait until you hear her sing. All right, Judy, whip along.
From the sky.
sunny, ring with the string of my heart. Was like a breath of spring, I heard a robin sing about a nest set apart. All nature seemed to be in perfect harmony, sing with the spring of my heart. Your eyes made skies seem blue again. What else could I do again but keep repeating through and through, I love you, love you. It was like a breath of spring, I heard a robin sing about a man set apart. Oh, they just seem to be in perfect harmony, sing with the strings of my heart. Sky seemed blue again. What else could I do again but keep repeating through and through, I love you, I still recall the thrill, I guess that I always will, I hope to never depart. Here with your lips to mine, breath of deep divine, sing ho, 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 with the
How much should you save? The friendly folks at the Big B, Barrett Mutual Savings Bank, generally say that you should have 6 months' pay in savings. Once reached, your savings goal will depend upon both the wants and needs of your family. Children need $10,000 or thereabout to finance college. Or perhaps your goal is the down payment for a home, money for a more comfortable retirement, or a new car. Don't wait another day. Stop in at Main Slater Road, Corbin's Corner, or Weather Rock offices of the Barrett Mutual Savings Bank. With passbook savings from 5% to certificates of deposit as high as 6%, the savings people at the Big B have a program tailored to fit your specific needs. So don't wait. Make a date at Barrett Mutual Savings Bank.
This is the Textron Theater.
And this is Helen Hayes.
Textron, maker of finest textile products, through the cooperation of America's great retail stores, presents a radio series of finest plays starring Miss Helen Hayes.
Let's turn now to a dramatic series with the charming lady of the theater, Helen Hayes.
This was the Textron Theater. It was a half an hour dramatization of plays, stories, novels, always starring Helen Hayes, and she was a very versatile actress and played everything from Cinderella to the old maid and kind lady. And the thing that I remember most about the Textron Theater and Helen Hayes was a dramatization of a short story called My Little Boy. I found it in an old secondhand book that I bought in a bookstore somewhere. It was written by a Danish author, Carl Ewald, whom I'd never heard of before. And I adapted it with the assistance of a fellow writer, Robert Senadella. And one of the sections on it wouldn't seem very much today with such shows as All in the Family and the topics that are talked about on the talk shows on radio and television so much, but it hit anti-Semitism right on the nose. And it received more mail than anything I have ever been connected with in all my years in radio or television. Some of it was vituperative, abusive, vitriolic, but most of it was very warming and very fine. It was considered pretty courageous in early 1940s.
And now our play, My Little Boy, starring Helen Hayes as the mother, with Master Arthur Cassell as My Little Boy.
beginning to live. Carefully, stumbling now and then on his little knock-kneed legs, he makes his way over the paving stones, looks at everything there is to look at, and bites at every apple, both those which are his due and those which are forbidden him. He's not a pretty child and is the more likely to grow into a fine lad. But he is charming. He has a habit which I love. When we're walking together and there's anything that impresses him, he lets go my hand for a moment. Then when he's investigated the phenomenon and arrived at a result, I feel his little fist in mine again. He has bad habits, too. He's apt, for instance, suddenly and without the slightest reason, to go up to people whom he meets in the street and hit them. What's in his mind when he does that, I don't know. But as long as he doesn't hit me, it remains a matter between himself and the people concerned. He has an odd trick of seizing big words in a grown-up conversation, storing them up for a while, and then asking me for an explanation.
Mother, what is existence?
Existence? Existence is life, and life is delightful, my little boy. Don't you be afraid of it. My little boy doesn't like spinach, but sometimes we have to have spinach for dinner, and sometimes, too, we have Aunt Anna for dinner. Now, spinach isn't it's a nasty dish, and Aunt Anna isn't very nice either. She has no children herself, but she knows how to raise children. Oh, yes. She's constantly setting us a good example, which can easily end by gradually and inevitably driving us to embrace wickedness. Why doesn't the little boy eat his delicious spinach?
I don't like it.
Oh, such delicious spinach. I know a poor, wretched little boy would be awfully glad to have such delicious spinach.
Where is he? Where is the poor boy?
The father of my little boy is amused. I can see him smile inwardly, but on the surface he's very serious.
Yes, Anna, where is this boy you speak about? What's his name?
Where does he live, Aunt Anna? He can have my spinach.
Mine too, Anna.
There are many poor boys who would be glad to get such delicious spinach. Very many everywhere.
Tell me where one of them is.
There are hundreds. Such delicious spinach, I must ask for another helping.
Now, look here, Anna, this is really too bad. Here we are with a whole lot of spinach, which we'd be very glad to get rid of if we only knew of someone who wanted it. You know a poor boy who'd dance for joy if he got some spinach. You know hundreds, but you won't tell us their names or where they live.
Well,
And you yourself sit quite calmly eating two whole helpings. That's not very nice of you, Aunt Anna.
Well.
After this, it would be most improper for us to ever have spinach here again.
Well.
What's the matter, Aunt Anna? Don't you want to finish your dinner?
Perhaps that was cruel. But you see, Aunt Anna didn't really know hundreds of boys who would like that spinach. And my little boy must not believe in things that are not true. My little boy has picked up a bosom friend out of the children in the block. His name is Skinny. My little boy admires him, and Skinny allows himself to be admired, so the friendship is established on the only proper basis.
I can't see anything wonderful about this Skinny.
Nor can I, but our little boy can, and that's enough. I once had a friend who could see nothing at all wonderful about you. And if I remember right, you had several friends who thought your choice of a wife was just inexcusable. It's the feeling that counts, not the object.
Thanks.
My little boy is playing with his friends on the sidewalk. Suddenly, there's a great hullabaloo. I go to the window and see my little boy and his playmates chasing a newcomer down the block. I go about my housework quietly, certain that my little boy will appear before long and ease his heart. And he comes in directly after.
Hello.
Well, what fun you've been having down there.
We chased the boy away.
You did? Why?
We won't let him play with us.
Why not?
Because he's a Jew.
Because he's a... Come on, we must catch him quickly. We must find him and beg his pardon.
We must?
Oh, of course, come on. My little boy hurries after me. He doesn't understand, but he's terribly in earnest. We look down the block. We shout and call. No use. The little victim and his persecutors have disappeared. So we go and sit up in my room again. The laboratory where our little soul is crystallized out of the big events of our little life. Well?
Well?
I hope you'll meet that boy one day so you can give him your hand and ask him to forgive you. You must tell him that you did that only because you were stupid. But if any other time anyone does any harm to him, I hope you will help him.
But, Mother.
Yes?
He was just a Jew.
Just a Jew? Let me tell you, the Jews are by way of being quite wonderful people. Do you remember the story of David in the Bible? That's one of your favorites.
Yes, David was wonderful.
Yes, he was. Well, David was a Jew. And the child, Jesus, whom everybody worships and loves, although he died 2,000 years ago, he was a little Jew also. My little boy stands with his arms on my knee, and I go on with my story. The old Hebrews rise before our eyes in all their splendor and power. They ride on their camels in coats of many colors and with long beards. Moses and Joseph and Samson and David and Saul. We hear wonderful stories. The walls of Jericho fall at the sound of a trumpet.
And what next?
We hear of the destruction of Jerusalem and how the Jews took their little boys by the hand and wandered from place to place, scoffed at, despised, and ill-treated. How they were not allowed to own either house or land, but could only be merchants. How nevertheless they remained true to their God and kept up their old sacred customs in the midst of strangers who hated them. The whole day is devoted to Jews. We look at old books on the shelves, which I love to read, and which are written by a Jew with a wonderful name, which a little boy can't remember at all. We sing songs with the words written by one Jew and the music composed by another. And when he falls to sleep that night, my little boy is hot and red. He turns restlessly and talks in his sleep. His father is worried.
He's a little feverish.
That's not surprising. Today I have vaccinated him against the meanest of all mean and vulgar diseases.
How do you happen to have those recordings in your own collection, Ed?
Well, I'm not a pack rat. I wish I had a lot of them. These are the only two I have. I liked them so much at the time that we did them that I bought a set of records of this, my little boy. And when tape came along, I had them transferred to tape, and I just keep these. I wish I had a lot of others.
That's a very moving story. You want to use another excerpt from the Textron Theater with Helen Hayes tonight. This is the story of Cinderella, and for what purpose are we playing this?
Well, I think that we lose sight of the fact that radio was a medium for drama which allowed the listener to build his own scenery and see his own characters dressed as he would like them to be dressed and use his imagination in a way that can't be duplicated by television. This is a simple story of Cinderella that we all know. It was a musical version with Helen Hayes and her guest star of that day, Alfred Drake. And the excerpt that you mentioned is simply Cinderella, fairy godmother, and being prepared to go to the ball, the change from rags to beautiful princess. And you imagine what it looks like.
What's that? Oh, I must have been dreaming. I heard the most beautiful music.
No, my child, you were not dreaming. You really did hear beautiful music. It is played for me wherever I go. Played by the four winds on a harp got by the little fairies from an island across the sea.
Oh, this is the most wonderful thing that ever happened. Who are you?
I am your fairy godmother, and it's high time I came along. We can't have a lovely little girl like yourself staying home alone by the fire. It will not do. It will not do at all.
It will not do at all it will not do. In fact, we are indignant that fortune so malignant is persecuting you.
But I don't wish to be rude, but I didn't know I had a fairy godmother.
One never knows about things like that, my dear. We fairies are funny people. But enough of this chatter. We have things to do, you and I. Now, let me see. If you're to go to the ball, you've got to go in style.
To the ball?
Of course you're going. How else can the prince fall in love with you if he doesn't see you?
Oh, but I couldn't go to the ball.
Oh, yes, you can, and you are. When I get finished with you, you'll be the belle of the ball. Now, let's begin at the beginning. What are you going to ride in? Ah, of course, that pumpkin on the window ledge.
But I couldn't ride in that. I'd rather stay home.
What? No. First, open the door and roll the pumpkin into the street.
Roll it up, roll it up, hold it home. Roll it up, roll it up, to the street we go.
There, now watch as I touch yon sad squash with my wand.
A coach! A gilded coach!
Not bad, eh? Now for horses to pull the coach. Those six mice in the mousetrap, the very things. Bring them over. No, pardon me. I forgot how you mortal women feel about mice. I'll go to them. I touch them so.
Six beautiful horses.
Now we need a coachman, of course. Do you have a nice fat rat around the house?
Oh, yes. My sisters keep him for a pet.
They would. Fetch him over. That's it. I touch him and lo.
A coachman! Why, he looks like Grimalda's beau.
Well, he'll have to do just the same. Now those six fine little lizards sleeping near the hearth. And we have six fine footmen in livery. Now you are equipped in style. Well, what's the matter, Cinderella? Aren't you glad?
Oh, yes, but I look so funny sitting in that grand coach in these rags.
Rags? Do you say, girl? Nonsense. Stand still and let me touch you.
Hickory, dickory, dickory, dap. There you are, a lovely frog.
Why, I am beautiful.
Yes, from the tips of your glass slippers to the pearls in your hair.
Glass slippers? Why, they are fit for a princess.
Well, I like that. You don't think I did all this to make you into a swineherd, do you?
Oh, no. But if he asks me who I am, what shall I say to the prince?
Ah, my child, when he sees you, you won't have to say a word. He'll do all the talking. Now, into your coach and off to the ball. But wait.
Yes, yes, fairy godmother.
There's only one thing I must insist on. You must be back here by the fire before the clock finishes the stroke of 12. If you are not, the horses will turn back into mice, the footman to lizards, the coachman to a rat, the coach to a pumpkin, and you will return to your rags. Understand?
Oh, yes, I understand. Before the clock finishes the stroke of 12.
Five, oh, time to go. She's off to the prince's ball. She'll dine and dance and find romance in a bright and gilded hall.
Oh, that was beautifully done. And we're going to continue with your story, Ed Rice, our guest here on the Golden Age of Radio, right after this message.
Buying a new car in 1972? If so, bank credit may cost you less. At Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, we offer low-cost, convenient auto loans, but we can do more than just put you on the road. We help you establish credit with a bank. We give you cash buyer leverage, and above all, you either start or continue a relationship with a large and progressive mutual savings bank. Once your credit is established, you may want to purchase a new home, improve your existing home, or take a personal loan to finance your trip across the country. Whatever your borrowing needs, it will pay you to start doing business with the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. Once an established Burritt customer with good credit, you become a preferred Burritt borrower. So don't wait. Come into any office of the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank.
Ed, we're going to turn the tables tonight. We're going to allow you to choose any show that you'd like to hear once again. Not necessarily a show that you had anything to do with, but something that will evoke some pleasant memories for you and, of course, by the same token, for our radio audience. What show might that be?
Well, when I was in Toronto directing a series of shows there, we used to break the rehearsal every day for 15 minutes just so I and the rest of the cast could listen to Vic and Sade. And I had nothing to do with Vic and Sade, but I'd love to hear it again.
Ed, was that possible?
Yes, I do happen to have one, and that's still really one of the great favorites among collectors. It's right up there among the I'll Have a Mystery and shows like that as far as being very, very popular.
And now get ready to smile again with radio's home folks, Crisco's Vic and Sade. Well, sir, it's a few minutes past 7:30 o'clock as we join our friends at the small house halfway up in the next block now. And we find all three of them in the living room, comfortably settled for a quiet evening at home. Vic is seated at the library table playing solitaire. Young Rush lounges on the Davenport doing absolutely nothing. And Sade, in her husband's easy chair, glances listlessly through the newspaper. She lays it aside now, observing...
Willie, I was talking to Miss Call this afternoon, and she said Mr. Chinbunny got bawled out for letting them print his picture in the newspaper week before last, or whenever it was.
Yeah, I heard that.
Severely criticized by the Board of Education.
Uh-huh, they give him the dickens. Told him it was a very undignified thing for the principal of a high school to engage in cheap and frivolous newspaper stunts.
I thought it was kind of halfway cute.
Board of Education's a pretty strict outfit.
Must be.
Fired a teacher just last month for wearing too much jewelry.
And Miss Call mentioned that, too. Mentioned several little gossips. I was astonished. I always think of school as a place where children sit and study and recite their lessons and everything's peaceful and quiet as a horse. According to Miss Call, lots of different interesting stuff goes on.
High school, ma'am, is a hotbed of politics. Wheels within wheels, crossed wires. High school is a seething river of human emotions.
Holy smoke, who's talking? Is there somebody in the room running for Congress, Sadie?
Sure sounds like it.
Repeat that speech, Walnut Stain. I want to paste it in my hat.
I was quoting from a composition Leland Richards wrote.
Leland must be one of the great minds of the present era.
He got that junk out of a book.
How's it go again?
High school is a hotbed of politics. Wheels within wheels. Crossed wires. High school is a seething river of human emotions.
According to Miss Call, there's lots of kind of halfway exciting stuff goes on up at high school. Told several little gossips.
It's a seething river of human emotions.
You never tell us any of the little gossips, Willie.
Sure I do. Trouble with you people is you never listen to a guy.
How do you mean?
I come home here and start to tell something exciting that happens up at school and nobody pays me a nickel's worth of attention.
I guess that is true sometimes.
True all the time.
Oh, hey, now, listen.
How about my story where Smelly Clark's Uncle Strap escorted his lady friend to Peoria for purposes of enjoying fish dinner?
Well, how about it?
I've started to tell that story to you and Gov 19,000 different times. Did I ever get the opportunity to finish it? No, I never. Why, tonight at the supper table, I tried to relate an anecdote about school.
What was that?
Elwin Stovely and the butter patties.
Oh, I expect I was busy.
You were sitting there eating.
Was I?
Sure. I told you that entire anecdote, and I'll bet $40 you and Gov neither one heard a single doggone word.
I have a vague recollection of it, Matchbox.
Yeah, vague recollection.
But, Sonny, you talk so much. When you're home here, you're talking constantly. Be impossible for a person to keep track of everything you say.
Uh-huh.
I want to know about Evelyn Stovely and sausage patties.
Butter patties.
Exactly.
Is this little high school gossip's rush?
Yeah.
Well, tell.
Elwin Stovely's a senior.
Uh-huh.
Yesterday noon, he ate his dinner at the high school cafeteria. He was standing at the desk having his tray checked, and the cashier noticed a butter patty peeking out of his mashed potatoes. She grabbed a fork and dug down in the mashed potatoes and found three other butter patties.
He was stealing them?
Well, that's kind of a harsh word, ma'am. Stealing is what it amounted to, I guess, though.
What's the price on butter patties?
Penny apiece.
Fred Stembottom does that with olives when he eats in cafeterias.
Does he?
Every time. Embarrasses Ruthie to death. She's so scared he'll get caught at it. If he'd only hide one or two olives in his mashed potatoes. But he crams them in so thick there's only a little film of mashed potatoes to cover them all, and the darn mashed potatoes look like bright green mashed potatoes. Ruthie fights shy of eating in the cafeteria anymore just on account of that. He's a corker, that Fred.
See, ma'am, I never got any more opportunity to tell my story than a rabbit.
Oh, I thought you were through with your story.
It's okay.
No, I did. I thought you'd finished. Well, go ahead. Did they punish the boy for taking butter patties?
The boy made restitution.
Paid for the butter patties?
He paid for 175 butter patties.
Really?
He estimated that during his high school career, he'd hidden 175 butter patties in his mashed potatoes while taking meals at the cafeteria. He handed over $1.06 and cried a little and said he was happy his conscience was clear and stated he was going to turn over a new leaf and never perpetrated another dishonest act as long as he lived.
Well.
Things as dramatic as that take place up at school every day of the year.
Yeah, guess they do, from what Miss Call was saying.
High school is a hotbed of politics. Wheels within wheels. Crossed wires. High school is a seething river of human emotions.
And there was some other little gossip about, Is there a manual training teacher named Mr.
Gutcher.
Yeah.
His wife beats him.
Yeah. What's that, little gossip?
Mr. Gutcher shows up at school every couple of days with a black eye or a bump on his head. Mrs. Gutcher beats him with a vacuum sweeper.
Imagine that, Vic. How do you kids find out all this stuff?
The kids talked around. No, ma'am, you take several hundred people in one building, and there's bound to be wheels within wheels. Bound to be crossed wires.
Mm-hmm.
Well, getting away from it, high school is a seething river of human emotions.
You said that.
Which concludes another brief interlude at the small house halfway up in the next block. And there we leave Crisco's Vic and Sade until tomorrow. This is Ralph Edwards speaking.
How do you glamorize a Barrett Mutual Savings Bank savings account? You can't use Hollywood adjectives such as glamorous, stupendous, magnificent, or such. What does describe such a Barrett account? Perhaps steady, dependable, reliable. Not much to shout about, probably, but there when you need it type of assurance. At Barrett Mutual Savings Bank, the safety of your savings is guaranteed by large surplus funds, insurance to $20,000 by FDIC, an agency of the U.S. government, plus a history of good service back to 1889. You get the highest legal interest rate at Barrett as well. Save where your money is safe and earns good dividends at Barrett Mutual Savings Bank.
Ed, perhaps you might bring our radio audience up to date as to what you do as producer of educational television at UConn.
There are several of us, and we work with the faculty at the university when they use television in the classroom. We have a microwave facility that extends the Storrs campus to all of the branches of the university throughout the state, and they can see and hear the professor by means of television, and they are also able to talk to him simply by speaking up. They don't have to walk to a microphone or push a button or pick up a telephone. They simply talk to the television set, and the professor can hear them, and they answer the questions, engage in conversation with him. And the work that I do is to help the professor use this equipment to the best possibility.
And, of course, we all know the possibilities of educational television in all forms. Ed Rice, I want to thank you very much for being our guest tonight. It's been such great fun reminiscing with you, sharing these experiences, and I hope you'll come back and see us again.
Well, thank you.
And, Ed, until next time.
Well, I'll have to sign off, I guess, huh, Dick?
This is Dick Bertel.
And Ed Corcoran.
Good night.
Tonight's program has been brought to you by Barrett Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889. The Golden Age of Radio is produced and edited by Brian Hartnett, engineered by Robert Schirego. This is Al Terzi.
A dancing program from the Paradise Restaurant in the Great White Way of Manhattan, New York City. Played by Glenn Miller and his orchestra. They all...
I'll silver!
A fiery horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty hi-yo silver. The Lone Ranger.
You know, John, many's the time I wish you could be here to fill that terrible vacancy.
In your heart, Mr. Fields?
Oh, in my fireplace.
Hit the spot, 12 full ounces, that's